Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about... This is a condensed podcast while driving. I'm driving late at night, or relatively late at night. It's only 6:40, and I've got to pick my daughter up again from this rock climbing venue in Penrith at 8:30. So I've got a quick detour out of the place. And I'll give a quick podcast dealing with sort of the quintessential hey, what's going on here factor. If I can say, when you're in a situation you haven't got perspective on it, and certain things happen, and bit by bit you pull things out and you start to order them out and lay them out. I can work out what's going on here. So, for me, medically, I've had this heart operation brain thing, it's quite an amazing thing. That all credit to the doctors and everyone. They've really fixed me up, patched me up, got me back on my saddle going on. So there's that amazement. So you've got to really go up. Then there's the issue of, things weren't going all that well. There's these crazy people trying to make life difficult for me. What's the overall mathematics of it? When I say mathematics, what's the theory, the process of what's causing people, the system to behave in a certain way? So in mathematics, there's an idea of a system that is moving parts which go to a coherent set of very small local rules, and it like a system, you can have a local areas, local components follow a simple set of rules, and it gets a large scale behavior. And I've been picking up this large scale behavior of society, on one aspect of it, it's this abandonment. What is this abandonment thing? You collect sort of system data. So there's various groups abandon you, like the employer, various things. So let's sort of talk about the abandonment of the employer. The employer is supposed to, if you're injured, rehabilitate you. That's the law in Australia. There's no not doing it. There's a whole lot of things which are the law, but when it comes to practice, they don't do it. And in the end, it's abandonment. And there's this process of that's abandonment. It's a code that everyone understands. You're being abandoned, right throughout the system. So this is interesting. It wasn't people saying, hang on, there's a process of being abandoned. And that also expands to government as you try and part of the government to say, hey, hang on, what's going on? This is a civil servicing. I just don't want to crash here. Okay. I'm traveling home. So there's this mathematics here, and the sort of the depth of abandonment, but there's whole regions of abandonment, and this very intense idea of in Australia abandoning certain people. So in a sense our colony was abandoned people from Europe were abandoned here, or we have detention centres where we abandon people in the detention centres, and there's this whole process going on, and stitching it together. So this medical stuff, you discover small sections and you discover it's a whole process. They're not only just fixing you, they're fixing everyone, and then doing it in a systematic way right across the place. It's costing a lot of money, we're doing, but we've decided that's what we're going to do. We're not going to let people die. We're going to fix them up. And it's not just me, it's multiple people, and it's a fairly complex system. Now, similarly here with abandonment, it's just not a single case of abandonment. It's a complex system of interrelated abandonment. There is a systematic, as is a medical system, there is an abandonment system going on. And I talked about the general strategy last time, a strategy document if you want to listen to it, but I'm going to look at now. Just today I spoke to someone and they said, oh, my husband has had exactly the same experience, and he was abandoned. And then you say, oh, well, let's... and I said, look, I have a generalized theory behind it. And I trotted out the very delineator of the theory, and it was, yep, that must be exact. So what I'm going to do now is just recite the critical theory of abandonment and what's going on. And at the time, I sort of truncated it till get to the key point. I'll start it off with a bit more, a bit slower, so to speak. Animals, prey animals like humans, rely on a limited range in which they operate, intersecting a much larger range of herbivores which come in and out and exit the range. So what that means is that you've got a small group of people which are have got to be coherent, and they've got to agree on a single plan to capture and gather things. They can't have people having different plans to capture animals. That's sort of basically as I can say. You can imagine you're going out on a hunt, and so-and-so decides that he's not going to hide, he's not going to smear dung on himself, he's not going to do all the things that are hard to come by, and he's not going to engage in any of the spiritual activities which program the hunt. So when I say spiritual activities that program the hunt, there's this thing I learned in the MBA about random decisions coming in to program people. So people are not doing things for logical things. They talked about the Inuits or the Cree Indians who used to have caribou or reindeer. They would feast on it. Then they would rip out the shoulder blade, which is a nice big flat piece of bone, a sort of flat plate of bone, put it in the flame, and it would, the heat, a certain amount of heat would crack it, and they'd look at the cracks and they'd use this to interpret what's going forward. Not unlike the ancients who used to look at entrails and stuff like that. And what it meant is that in a hunter-gathering process, this is great because the hunters were always unpredictable because they were following a map produced randomly, so it added coherence and randomness to together to go ahead. So often people believe thoroughly in a plan which has no scientific justification, and it does work. Now, it also works when you're fighting other humans. If you've got a group of people and you attack them randomly out of synchronous and for no reason at all, they can't work out what's going on. In terms of game theory, it's game theory is off because you've got a random number generating what you're doing. So that's the start off. So if you can imagine that humans have got a tendency to be slightly random and aggressive and not to follow logical things, because that works very well for hunting animals in this area where you don't want to be successful all the time. You want to be moderately successful, such the animal population can survive, revive, and then go through various territories and stuff like that to go forward. Then after this, because I have to say this relatively quickly, we have the evolution of agriculture. And people say, agriculture, the great thing is you're no longer... you have got a reliable source of food, but also you have to control the entire region, productive region, in terms of the protein and stuff like that. It is very reliable, but it's the same amount of soil all the time that's doing it. So depending on the scale, it works quite well, but it's got a scale problem. The other aspect of agriculture is that you have civilization. And although we have this very romantic idea because we always film civilization for the people in power, the overall story is that a lot of people were quite miserable when civilization was at a certain rate. The actual solution of domestication was a dual domestication of plants, animals, and people. And domesticated people were slaves. And in order to have you can obviously see there's a difference between an animal and a person you're domesticating it. But the domesticated human is a slave, and to domesticate it, you have to have a process of abandoning their humanity. And you have to have a process where you've still got this random number generator ideas coming up, the king to go, or the leader of society. But you have to have this swap where you will go along with the thing. And there's sort of like three sections to modern civilization. One is domestication of plants and animals, guns, iron, steel. What is it? Guns, steel, and germs. I think it used to be a classic 1970s take on all of this. Besides that, you have this, you've got that, but in order to exploit that, you can't exploit an animal. You have to actually co-exploit humans, turn them into slaves, and in order to do that, you have to have a system of thinking which has a hierarchy and a king and a process, which is by definition not grounded in logic. And so this process can go out, and if this process goes bad, people go, oh, I don't know. But there's a whole lot of things can go bad, yet people will do it. So it may well be that, I'm just trying to think things that could go bad. You have to raise sheep and things like that, but you have to slaughter it at a certain time. Now, this is interesting that the slaughtering of sheep is imbued into the religious system, the sacrifice, the process of it. You may have to not like it. You may have to go off to war and most probably die, especially if you're not high ranking. Your probability of surviving is actually quite low. So you have to have this ability to override gut instinct and produce it. So our view of society being... we have evolved from this horrible thing where people, you know, if the thing is that you're a slave, you're either coerced, and once you haven't got the coercion, the only coercion you can have is abandoning people. And look, I wouldn't have thought, oh, abandon, oh, how uncomfortable, oh, shut up, you're a bit of an idiot, and stuff like that. But once you've been abandoned, you sort of really, say, hang on, what is the mathematics of it? And so the mathematical model is this slavery thing. Now, what's happening here is that there's some new things happening. I'm going to have to stop for the moment as I drop off on this location. But the issue here is that there are new things happening. Now, we don't have to actually enslave as many people to farm anymore. Slavery's what has actually beaten slavery is not free will and stuff like that. What's actually beaten slavery, and this is a slave to washing machines, slave to farming, is mechanization, automation, the discovery of quantum mechanics. And I'm just going to have to stop it here, and I'll be back real soon, I promise. Okay, I'm back again. So the general idea is that we have a system of doing things which is set up to keep us alive, which is of agriculture, and that our blissful view of agriculture, when we do the archaeology, we say, oh, this is the way it was, and it's come, and it's all, we've got this blissful view, this view of the farmer gets the food, we get to eat it, all's well and plenty. But we're in this archaeological thing where we've got this archaic behaviour system in which people are enslaved, you know, about enslaving, abandoning, got all this architecture, and it doesn't fit. And so there's a few stories here. Is that you may say, oh, this is another, you know, crazy academic, and one of the things that they do is that they do have these ways of getting together theories which sound nice, but when you think about it, they're pretty useless. What, in fact, is happening is that you have this basic idea that the people who are interested in enslaving and abandoning people also have this entire belief structure about an agricultural belief structure, and that slaving, enslaving and abandoning people are necessary. So they do it because they think it is important to do. And there's so many different things in terms of when people really go into, say, a religion and say, why do you do such and such? I think Carl Jung asked this group of people who are doing sun dances, why are you doing the sun dances? Well, aren't you stupid? If we don't do the sun dance, the sun won't move. It's the actual idea that they have to do it. They become programmed. And part of programming is that they don't question what's going on. So they are programmed to enslave and enslave, and if they're not enslaving, they're if they can't enslave you, they've got to abandon you. So you're a choice of that you're a willing slave, or you're abandoned. And there's this sort of, if you'd like, a template, a fill-in form, or like a termite inspection form. You say this, and you find overall that people who subscribe to this have got certain characteristics in that they've got this idea. Well, they don't know, they're never going to know, it's unknowable, yet they have the system of coping with not knowing, that is, by following a recipe. So, and I think this is indeed, and people who go along with the enslavement, abandonment, proto-agricultural, or that sort of archaic agricultural view of things, go ahead and do it. And look, there's many examples of it. Now, of course, what's happened with me is that I've been not enslaved, been abandoned, and I've just sort of, this math sounds interesting. What's the most important thing to understand our world, universe? Oh, quantum mechanics, special relativity. I mean, left alone here. Nothing to do. Let's have a book. Rather than actually withering like a cow or something like that, it's been left out in the paddock to, you know, we're going to ignore that, we're going to neglect that one. I've sort of, there's been this rich variety of things coming forward. I don't have very much more time to do it. So, in general, and I think this is true for any sort of theory, once you come up with it, it's like the zodiac theory. If you have any theory, you can generally fit most things to it, and it's just what you do with your intellectual process. Also, this theory is pretty much like the caribou bone, which tracks. It's something that you do, and you can interpret, you start the process of interpreting, which is like the Caribou Indians had to plan, had to move, had to go ahead. They couldn't muck around about thinking about how they're going to do the caribou. They had a process and they followed it. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. So this is very much a similar thing of just saying, looking back and saying, look, there is these inbuilt beliefs, and these people have a belief system for it. And indeed, there is no benefit. They're not going to give you a discount. If you can identify 10 bastards, you can get a discount at the next bed you buy, something like that, or computer. It doesn't work that way. However, what it does mean is that you can pull back and let people fall on their face and start to manage the real issues. The impetus of bastardization can actually fall on its face, and you can start to manage it. In as much that there's a certain set of belief systems, and they have to, in order to make things work, predictably make mistakes, and you can actually force them, not force them, but you can say they can either do the right thing, or they can do something worse to going on, which commits them down, like in terms of game theory, for the next worst thing, so that you can actually make it a real scrambled mess for them. It doesn't sound very good, but this is just saying that as with agriculture, we've worked out a way of releasing all these people, And we haven't really worked out what to do with people, except we'll continue to enslave them. And we sort of think, oh, I don't know, we're going to keep on. If I really look at it, we've really enslaved everyone. And I think Ralston Saul, a philosopher, said, now look, what is going on? After World War II, the workforce doubled. We had now women in the workforce. Then we have automation. So why is everyone working? What, you know, the big question, and he had an answer to it, of course, and his answer was, you know, why are people working so much? What is wasting all that productivity? And he said, big corporations, and the big corporations fighting each other was needlessly unproductive. The advertising, the takeovers, the waste associated with big organizations. And you can, at any point, you could say, oh, the waste with people wanting to upgrade their iPhones and doing things like that. But I think it's going to run out. And I think we have to look back to the fact that it's not how we waste, but why we're so wasteful. Now, obviously, abandoning people wasn't so wasteful in the past because they were going to die anyway. However, if you abandon someone and the doctors come in and fix them, so they're, you know, refit, and what they're doing, they're, you know, you won't let them in the car park or anything like that. The system has changed, and so there is this possibility that you can start to introduce long-term successful strategies and to pick it. Or if you put it in the other way, the people who are locked in the agricultural enslavement abandoned paradigm can't operate on a higher level mathematical level, because part of that paradigm is abandonment, enslavement, and information I don't know I am abandoning, I'm pulling it out, whereas a researcher will say, there's information I don't know, I've got to know some more, I've got to actually have a strategy for dealing with it, and their strategy. So this is one of the most incredible things, is that once I start working on quantum mechanical devices, you know, handheld quantum mechanical devices, which I'm getting back home, I might be able to work for a little while. I've really built this next quantum mechanical device up. It's not giving me a really good signal at the moment. I have to get back to it. The interesting thing is that they'll say, "Oh, people will ask because it's not that I'm showing. I'm just happen to walk through with a little oscillating pendulum in my hand. It's now microscopic. It's now a handheld. It used to be room filled. It used to be sort of a plate size. Now it's hand size." And they're saying, what it is? I said, oh, it's a quantum mechanical pendulum. Have you heard of quantum mechanics? No. Okay. So, no. However, so the advantage of this is that, you know, previously people like yourself who didn't want to understand, didn't know about it, you can at least get your foot in the door and say, look at this. This is quantum mechanics and stuff like that. And the interesting thing is, and I think against this particular person, is that they're the full-on, full house, the agricultural view of enslavement, abandonment, and knowledge. You know, if I don't want to know knowledge, I don't have to, because I can enslave people, I can abandon them, I can reject them, I can do whatever I want. And so it provides people with a toolkit for survival in a place where the knowledge wasn't there yet. I don't know if you can possibly imagine what it was like to be in ancient Rome or ancient Greece or back that time. No lights. There might have been a candle, a hearth fire, but it would be a blackout. We could not comprehend it. People had a way of communicating information, but how do they do it? We've got the mobile phones and all this stuff of things going across. It's such a different process. And back then, when it was all very dark and there was not a lot of information, we're going across, which is really sort of, to me, ultimately fascinating, that these people, their world has been undermined by two ways. It's been undermined by computers, which are based on quantum mechanical principles of Fermi surfaces, and look at digital electronics. It's undermining on one way. And, unfortunately, I am the termite of the agricultural enslavement world. I am their worst nightmare, because I can mathematically work out what their strategy is, what their weakness is, and game theory around it. And I will have to be stopped. But if I just keep on building devices and getting on top of things with inventions, I will have to win eventually, because that's gaining credits, and what's losing credits is the missing the opportunities and deadlines, you know, legislative deadlines to rehabilitate me and get me back into the workforce. So I'll finish that up and put that off as another podcast. I hope that's useful. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.